Kol HaLashon, the entire Torah, everywhere.
Hi, everybody. Welcome to tonight's program with Coach Menachem Bernfeld on this beautiful winter Sunday night. Thank you for joining us. Tonight's shiur is shiur 209. This is the 209th program that we are doing. Again, I thank you for every week by thanking all the people that posted on their statuses, email people about it, let people know about it. It's a place where we could talk through very important issues. I was Sichas Chaverim, a place where we could talk through important things with rabbis and therapists around the world and try to get some clarity on some important topics. If anybody would like to join our WhatsApp status, community chats, please WhatsApp me at 732-314-1710. I'll send you the community link and you could see all the information there, all the speakers, all the replays. I'll also post it in the chat shortly. And, please join, be part of it and see what's going on. Again, for all the people that are watching this on YouTube, please click on the subscribe button. So when Menachem uploads every week the video, you get the notification, you get to watch it. And you can also click on the like button so me and Menachem can make millions of dollars on the views. Thank you for all the advertising sponsors, the Lakewood Scoop here in Lakewood. Stefan, you're in all the Jewish websites. You're in the Lakewood Scoop and Eli Naron from Five Times Central, Kyle Kaufman from JCN, promoting all the Jewish digital platforms. Again, if anybody's here the first time, every Sunday night, 9:30 p.m. Eastern on the Zoom ID, we have a program, either a therapist, a rabbi, just dynamic people. Next week, we're actually going to have an amazing program as well. Please join us on the 23rd with two big therapists, Alex Rand from Brooklyn, New York, Yeshua Carbonoa from Crown Heights. And the topic is going to be trauma and the brain, EMDR and brain spotting, healing trauma through the eyes and body. Something very interesting. I mean, I know people are very into EMDR. Brain spotting is a little bit similar. They're both specialists in that field, and we're really going to get into deep stuff of that. So please join us next week. It should be something very interesting. Again, tonight's shiur is shiur 209, and we do a gematria every week. So Arnav's going to give us the gematria for 209.
Shalom Avracha, everyone, to Zoom shiur 209. Unblocking the wisdom of the body. It takes tremendous wisdom to accomplish the feat to unlock the wisdom of the body, which leads us up to tonight's Gematria 209, V'zeh Chacham HaChachamim. This is the wisest of the wise.
Stefan, you are thrown the job of teaching us the wisest of the wise. That's the category we're putting you in, so that's good. We're going to start, of course, with Coach Menachem Bernfeld. For anybody who sees the title and is not sure what we're talking about tonight, Menachem, what are we doing here tonight? What are we trying to accomplish tonight?
Okay. Welcome, everyone. For the Gematria, it's amazing how you come up every week. Hashem should give you koyach, many, many more. So welcome, everyone, to another Let's Get Real with Coach Menachem. We're doing tonight number 209, Baruch Hashem. And the topic, unlocking the wisdom of the body, integrating mind, body, and soul in therapeutic connection with our body. We've discussed a lot in the past. We've even touched upon this concept, but I think tonight we're going to be learning a new language. It's a language of the body. And, like we heard in the past, it's an art that has been lost for many. And I would say there's a reason why, which probably we'll discuss tonight. The reason why not everyone is connected to those sensations to understand why we shut it down, everybody for a different reason. Sometimes it can be hard, it can be painful. Different ages, sometimes very young, decided, you know what? Being connected, feeling, no, it's not working. So, you know, I'll just be able to continue without it. Just staying in my logic mind, staying with my thoughts, doing the right thing.
Kol HaLashon.
That's beautiful. And that's how we feel. So talking about when a person goes through a challenge, many times we lock it up, we suppress, we put it away, and then we wonder why we have so many triggers. When we're older, we're not even aware what, you know, when you meet that person or coworker, spouse, kids, can be so many triggers that come up, and we're not aware of it. If it's left unresolved, then basically, like we say, the body starts knocking on the door and saying, hello, hello, there's something that I would like you to take care of. But, you know, you might say, no, I decided a while ago not to go there, and I don't want to go there. So I know many people sent emails, questions. When you talk about these stuff, talk about trauma and stuff that happened many years ago, the questions come up, does that mean I have to go back all the years? Does it have to mean, you know, to clean out, to see what happened? I'm saying that would be crazy. I don't want to do that. How do I figure out what it is, what my body's telling me? Do I have to know in order to heal? Great question. And most of the time, people are afraid. And we'll hear more tonight. But again, these questions come up, and I know from experience, people don't want to go there. People don't want to talk about it. They don't want to connect. And talking about feeling, understanding the language of the body, you really have to be able to, you know, relax and allow, and things come up. So again, it is a different language. If you're used to, you know, logic, understanding things and working with 1 + 1, then tonight we're going to learn new things. But those are the questions that come up. And I think this is what we try to do, create a safe space and where we can ask these questions. And we have someone here, Stefan, your clients. I got a call from your clients from Montreal telling me this is the therapist you have to have on. And I'm glad we have opportunity to have you on. We're going to start the conversation. And even if, you know, we have people out there who can just after the program think maybe, after all these years thinking it is what it is and I'm trying to make peace, maybe I can get the help I need and I can still change something to feel better. That is the goal. Emet Hashem with a lot of siyata d'shmaya, and Hashem shall help us put the right words and be able to help us all. Thank you.
Thank you, Menachem. Beautiful opening. Okay, let's get into it tonight. Okay, we're going to start with, again, the topic is unlocking the wisdom of the body, integrating the mind, body, and soul in the therapeutic healing process. That's the topic tonight. Sounds pretty loaded. I'm going to read Stefan's bio, and then I'm going to hand it over to him. Stefan Ben Shushan, clinical health psychologist, meditation teacher. He's a clinical health psychologist with over 30 years of clinical experience. He's the founder and the clinical director of Clinique. I don't have the French, so I'm going to try my best. Clinique Passois in the West Island of Montreal. He is a publisher, author, and inspirational speaker, and mindfulness meditation expert. After completing graduate and postgraduate work in health and educational psychology at the McGill University at the MUHC, Stefan has developed extensive professional training in the areas of cognitive behavioral therapy, behavioral neuroscience, health psychology, psychology, psychoneurology, whatever it is, I can't read it, spiritual-based therapies, empowered coached attachment, style emotion-focused therapy, transformation imagery, body-centered psychotherapy, mindfulness meditation. He's recently completed multiple trainings in psychedelic-assisted psychotherapy, which we had a few sessions on, by the way, and is passionate about emerging science and practice. Stefan integrates diverse psychotherapy approaches in his private practice and tailors his approach to each individual client. Stefan works with adults, teens, and couples. In group settings, Stefan has led many corporate wellness workshops, retreats, and school-based mental health programs. He's reputed mindfulness meditation instructor where he gives guides to students into mindfulness movement and breathwork, teaching the basic principles of mindfulness. So that's his bio. And I just want to say, like Menachem said, one of his clients did reach out and said, you have to have him on. And then we spoke to a few other people and it was a real honor that he said he'd come on. This is a very powerful topic. And I don't know if anybody's read any books and I'm not trying to say that, Stefan, but you know, there's a lot of literature on what we're going to talk about tonight. Stefan, the floor is yours. Open it up.
Thank you. Thank you for having me on. It's an honor. It's a pleasure coming in from Montreal, Canada. Share with you some of the tools, some of the wisdom I've learned over 32 years of practice as a psychologist. You know, these are special times now, right? These are very special times. The world's changing. The politics seem to be changing. What's going on in the Middle East to me is difficult to see, difficult to hear, but it's going to change our fate. It's going to change the world in many, many ways. And you know, I have a lot of clients who go through stress and worry and anxiety, whether it's the Middle East or whether it's about their children or whether it's about their health or about whatever. Anxiety is the number one reason why people seek a psychologist or mental health expertise. And a lot of the things that we worry about are really focused on something that we don't really have control over, which is what's going to happen in the future. And when we start wondering, what if this, what if that, then we lose sight of what's really happening in the here and now, in the moment-to-moment awareness. And we're not really living anymore. And when I say these are special times, I mean like we're on our phones, we're on our devices, we're on the computer, we're watching things, we're on social media, but we're not really experiencing life in the way that it was meant to be, in the way it was designed to be. And that creates a lot of anxiety. It creates a lot of uncertainty and unpredictability because we're feeling powerless. This is one of the generations where most of the clients that I see, the number one feeling that they're experiencing after anxiety is powerlessness. There's nothing I can do. I can't change anything. I can't do anything. We've been brought up, we've learned that we should have control over things in our life. We should have control over the events. We should control how our kids and how they behave and what they learn. We should control our behaviors and our mind. And we're realizing there's a lot of things that we don't have control over. And so that goes out, that creates stress because we think we should be able to control something and we don't. And we're not letting God, we're not letting Hashem to do his work. So a lot of the time we're feeling like we have to control, we have to direct, we have to do everything. And when we can't, when we don't succeed, we end up feeling anxious, depressed, powerless, and so forth. And then the next level, when we stay in that state for a long time, that can create trauma. And the trauma lodges itself in the body. So that's a little bit of what I want to talk to you about tonight, is why does it lodge in the body? How does it stay in the body? And what can we do about it? Sometimes it manifests and becomes a form of a symptom that's difficult to treat. Sometimes it turns into a disease process. I just want to start by saying that trauma doesn't cause disease. Trauma doesn't cause any health problems, but it can be a significant contributor. It can accelerate the process. And so one of the things that we need to be able to do is to stop, is to recognize, okay, what's going on right here, right now? And be able to focus on present moment, everyday moment kind of cues, which are very represented in our body. And so that's kind of where I come in with a mind, body, spirit approach. I work in a holistic model and an integrative approach. So what does that mean? It means I don't just focus on what are you thinking? What are you feeling? But I also look at what are you eating? And are you moving? Are you exercising? How are you moving? How are you exercising? When? And then your faith. Are you spiritual? Do you have a belief system? What's your connection with God? What is God to you? What's happening? Do you bring God into your life? Do you bring every awareness into the things that are happening inside of you? Or do you feel disconnected with something? Most of the people that I work with, when they have a health issue of any kind, it's a form of disconnect. And whatever they're coming in for, my first point is, where are they out of balance? Where do they lose their balance? How can I help them to reconnect? So that can be reconnect to themselves, to a childish part of them, the part of them that used to laugh and play and be happy and joyful. And they stop laughing and being joyful. And they stop play. It could be someone who's disconnected from their spouse. Could be someone who's disconnected from their family, disconnected from the passion that they used to have in life. So where are they disconnected? Because as soon as you find the root of the disconnect, you find the root of the health issue or the root of the disease sometimes. So part of the work that I do is to help people to reconnect to a healthy part of themselves. Now, some people don't have those happy memories. Some people have had a lot of childhood pain, abuse, strain. And when you ask them, how was your childhood? Sometimes they don't have a happy childhood. Sometimes it's very difficult for them to find those positive memories. So we need to create new ones. Create new ones in the mind's eye. So the mind is what allows us to perceive situations and people and events in our world in a way that is not transparent. So when you look at the sky and you see, yeah, it's a blue sky, some people might not see the blue sky. Some people might see the clouds in the sky. Some people may not even be able to look up at the sky. So one of the things that's important is to be able to look at each person without judging them, but having compassion for where they come from, for what their experience was, so what they've learned, what they've seen, what they've heard, and all the experiences that they've had has played a role into creating their perception of who they are today and how they see the world. So that's why for me, I don't go into the judgment part. I don't go into judging someone as good or bad or evil or this or that. Everybody's a product of their environment, of their upbringing, of their programming. We understand the programming, we can better predict the individual and we can better support them in terms of refining where their balance point is or where they lost themselves. So I'll give you an example. I had a client who had cancer, and she was suffering so greatly with her cancer. And she was very sad, very depressed, because she was going to be leaving her children and she was going to leave her family behind, and she didn't want to go. She wasn't ready to go. And one of the things we talked about was, what's changed in your life? How are you different now than you were 30 years ago, 40 years ago? And she thought about it for a long time and she says, I don't remember. And that was difficult for her to see that. That brought tears to her eyes to forget about how she was when she was younger. But the time after she came back, the session after, she says, you know, I do remember now. And I remember playing on a swing. I used to swing all the time. And I used to play the piano. And I loved playing the piano. And that was my fun thing to do. That was my escape. That was my passion. And I asked her, are you still playing the piano? And she goes, no, sadly, I have the piano, but I never use that. Why not? I asked her. Too busy. Life takes over. Not really keen on it anymore. And so, but just talking about the piano got her interested in reconnecting to it a little bit. And so she says, you know what? Tonight I'm going to go home and play. And she played and she played and she fell in love with the piano again. And then she started walking and going to the park and swinging on the swings, just like she was when she was a little girl. She felt light. She felt free. And just for those moments when she was playing on the swing, when she was on her piano, she forgot about the cancer. She forgot about the stress. She forgot about the anxiety. She was just able to be with herself. And that awakened a part of her that was very deep. And that's kind of what I want to invite you all to do, is to connect to something that's deep inside of you that you may have put aside, may have disconnected yourself from. Again, that could be an external thing, like a person, a thing that you used to do, or a part of ourselves that we've neglected or that we've forgotten about. So that's part of the message, right? So to me, healing is about connection, finding connections. Where am I disconnected from? It could also mean connecting to my body. So a lot of us have no idea what's going on in our body. We live in our heads. We think. We plan, we look at our calendar, we look at what we have to do, and we just do it. And we eat because the food's on the table and we eat. Do we taste our food? No. Do we know what's going on once the food enters our mouth? No, because we're too busy watching TV while we're eating. Or we're too busy doing something else, watching our phones or our social media. And so we disconnect from everything that our body is experiencing and doing. And even when we go to the bathroom, right? Our biological needs, we have to go to the bathroom several times a day. How often do we actually feel what's going on? We don't. We're too busy thinking about the next thing we have to do. What a waste of time. What a nuisance. I have to stop. I have to go to the bathroom. So the body gets neglected. And when the body gets neglected, it's like a little toddler. It starts crying and wants to express itself. It wants attention. And it seeks attention by expressing some sort of ailment or physical health issue or symptom. It just kind of knocks on the door and say, hey, I don't like this. I need your attention. Pay attention. And it could be just like a stomach ache. It could be a headache. It could be a slight shoulder pain. It could be like a little knee thing. Nothing serious, but it's just, hey, I'm trying to get your attention here. And then when we don't listen, because it's just a nuisance, we take a pill to swallow and it's gone. We don't feel the pain anymore and we can go on with our day. And then the body says, oh, they didn't listen to me. I guess I have to be louder. Just like the toddler, it's going to cry louder and louder. It's going to come back. And it's going to come back in a different way sometimes. Until we stop and say, okay, what's going on? Then we have to go to the doctor, and then we have to go through a physio or whatever. But what the body is trying to express is often what our emotions are not being dealt with, right? So there's a famous saying, the organs weep the tears the eyes refuse to shed. The organs weep the tears the eyes refuse to shed. So sometimes we have, for example, new stress conditions like colitis, like Crohn's, and any digestive issue. IBS is the biggest one of all, where people have an irritable bowel syndrome. We didn't have those conditions 20 years ago. It's a new thing. So a lot of IBS is your body is trying to express to you something that you're not willing to listen to. So it could be a frustration that you're dealing with. It could be a sadness. It could be a hurt. It could be an anger. It could be a fear that you're not willing to acknowledge. So that emotion, because an emotion is, I see it as energy. So emotion, the word emotion is emotion, energy in motion. Think of it that way. So when you feel an emotion, let's say fear, and you're not wanting to feel it, like, I don't want to feel fear. I want to be strong. But you still have a little bit of fear. Something's, you're afraid of something inside you. So where does that energy go? It gets lodged in the body. It gets lodged where? In a certain part of the body that deals with those emotions. So fear often goes to the gut. And so when we have enough fear for long enough, we end up having gastric symptoms, gastrointestinal issues. And so we go to the doctor, they prescribe certain medications to help us with whatever. But it doesn't go to the core. Like, why am I suffering in the first place? So the symptoms that we feel are not just your body's way of complaining. It's not just an inconvenience. This is a part of you that's really trying to connect to you. Listen. Think of it as a toddler that's calling you and saying, hey, I'm trying to get your attention here. If you care about this child, if you care about this toddler, if you love them, you will stop and say, what is it, sweetie? What's going on? What do you need? What do you feel? How can I help you? So we do that to the children if we're well-intended and healthy, but we don't do that with our body. So what I like to do with a lot of clients is to help them to connect to the feeling and where that is lodged in the body. Because when you connect to the body houses so much. Houses our unconscious, houses our needs, houses the little part of ourselves, the child part of ourselves, houses our spirit and our soul. Our soul talks through the body. So when we have, let's say, a stomach ache, and we stop and you listen to what goes on in the body, and you just really, really carefully listen, you're going to get messages, little voices, little stories, little visuals. It could be a word, it could be an action, it could be something. But you're going to hear something, and you're going to think, oh, yeah, it's just me making it up. But if you really quiet your mind and you stay present with the sensation that's going on, you will actually hear a story, you'll hear a message, and you might even know what to do about it. And so, just like the toddler, what is the toddler looking for? He or she is looking for acknowledgement. Like, do you see me? Do you hear me? I'm here. Hello. And so in doing that, by stopping and recognizing, okay, what is happening in my body right now? What is this headache all about? Where does this come from? And it's not just related to the lights and the temperature change and the hormones. It's there for a reason, right? Your head is hurting you. Something is trying to give you a message and you're not listening. So stop, pay attention, ask the right question. What kind of questions, you might say? Questions like, what's happening? What are you feeling? What is this all about? What do I need to understand? Help me understand. And then thanking the symptom. Believe it or not, it sounds crazy. Why would I want to thank my headache? Because the headache is representative of something deeper. And it's giving you a message. It's part of your soul coming through and trying to speak to you. So of course you want to thank your soul for sharing something important and deep. Thank you, headache. Thank you for coming to me right now and telling me that you're feeling overwhelmed or overstressed or tired or whatever it is. You know, when I work with people with cancer, first session I tell them, I say, you know, I'm going to make you do a very difficult exercise that may seem difficult for you now, but at the end of the sessions, you're going to see this is going to be an easy exercise for you. And I'm going to ask you to write a letter to the cancer to thank it for coming into your body. And you're going to write the letter, dear cancer, thank you for coming into my life, because thanks to you, this is what's different. This is what I've changed. This is what I understand. This is what I've learned. And of course, the first session, they want to slap me, because who wants cancer? Nobody wants cancer. But by the end of the journey, of the healing journey that they've taken, they totally get the concept of why they needed to go through this. Nobody wants cancer. And of course, nobody wanted to have to go through that difficult ordeal. But a lot of the times, the reward is that I've changed my life. I think differently. I feel differently. I've moved on from this or from that. I'm no longer suffering emotionally with this and that. It's almost as if the cancer gave us permission to be able to address things that we never thought we wanted to do, whatever, it's no big deal, it's on the back burner, one day I'll think about it, or it's not such an issue. Well, now the cancer is like telling you, you have an urgency of living. You better do something, buddy, or else. Okay, I'm going to listen. That's what the cancer does. It makes the message so much louder because we don't pay attention the rest of the time. Most of the time we're on automatic pilot, going through life, not even living it, just going through life. So I come back to what I started with, in that most of us are not really paying attention to moment-to-moment awareness. We're just simply going through automatic pilots, doing what we have to do, being disconnected from our environment, disconnected from our feelings, disconnected from our body, and obviously disconnected from living. So what the healing happens, when the healing happens, it's because we're finally stopping the mind from running the show. And we're starting to experience things from a very different perspective, from a mind-body-spirit perspective. So when I walk into a room, I'm not just thinking about who's there, what am I going to do, what I'm feeling from my heart, I'm feeling from my gut. I allow my mind-body-spirit system, my internal GPS, that's how some people call it, my internal GPS, to decide what's going on. That's how I'm living. I'm living engaged in the process. I'm engaged in the environment that's around me. And that's fully living. And so when we're fully awake and we're fully living, that's when there's peace in our heart. That's when there's peace in our mind. That's when, no matter what happens in my life or in the world, you know what? I'm okay. I'm going to be fine. I can get through whatever. I have the confidence. I have the resilience. I have the belief that I can take care of anything. And if I have to go through a life change, it's going to be maybe challenging, but I'll get through it. So what happens is that we start living in a much calmer way, in a much more grounded way, more peaceful way, more aware of our environment. And in my mind, we're more connected to God. And that's when we start listening and we start hearing God speaking to us. We start noticing things we never used to notice before. And it's almost as if we are carried by God. We are carried by Spirit. Life becomes easier because we're not always go, go, go. We're not driving our life. We're allowing life to carry us. We're allowing God to manifest through our world. And that makes our life so much easier because I don't have to take charge of everything all the time. It's a lot of pressure. It's a lot of stress to have to be responsible for everything. If I let God in with me, in my mind, my body, then beauty happens. And there's an ease that happens. And that's where we settle in and let life happen. So that's a little bit of a gist of what I do to give you a feeling of the kind of work that I do and how I work with clients. So hopefully some of those words touched you and maybe there's a bit of a curiosity about what does he mean by that. So feel free to write your comments in the chat or participate. We'd love our conversations.
Hey, Stefan, that was a very powerful opening. Anybody's here tonight, please, if you have a question for Stefan, he's here to try to answer anything. This is a very powerful concept, what he's saying. There's a lot of books written about it. I'm just going to put it out there. Body Keeps the Score is like one of the best-selling books of all time. Mm-hmm. And this is really the general concept that he's talking about. You can move it into different areas, into religious, spirituality, God. And, you know, Dr. Sarno, I guess, is a tidbit of it also, partially. I'm throwing it out there, but there's a lot to what he's saying. And anybody has a question, please text me. Live questions go first. And let me just see over here. Hold on 1 second. Okay, we're going to ask a few poll questions, answer to the best of your ability, and then afterwards we're going to go to live questions. We have a few live again. If you want to ask, text me. Let's get on the roster to ask. So, Stefan, you're going to get bombarded with questions tonight. So here we go.
Love it.
4 poll questions. How do you understand the idea of connecting the mind, body, and the soul for healing? Like, how do you understand it? It means bringing your thoughts, feelings together in sync for better health. The word is really putting them together. The other one is about balancing mental health, physical, and spiritual. So it's different than the first one because the first one is like you're trying to put them all together. The second one is more like I have to know how to balance them, keep them separate but balanced. Third one is focused on knowing yourself and how these parts work together. So it's really not about any of those, just more like how to work with them. Just more like, I guess, a theoretical question. Second question. Have you ever experienced integration of mind, body, and soul in healing on your personal journey? And when I wrote, when Menachem gave me this question, think of something, whether it was something very super stressful or something super exciting where you understood your body was telling you something and you understood where it was coming from. Like, how did that feel? Like you're going to a wedding or something and you see that your heart rate is racing and you're excited and you're able to put it all together. So yes, it was informative for me. Yes, but I didn't fully understand the time what was going on, or no. I want to understand it more, but I'm interested in exploring what that means when they all sort of work together in sync. Third question. What do you believe is the biggest challenge in integrating mind, body, and soul in therapy? A, lack of awareness about the connection. B, difficulty connecting to the body's sensations. C, resistance to emotional vulnerability. Or 3, balancing all 3 simultaneously. 4th question. When somebody experiences pain in their body, how do you determine if it's physical, emotional, or a mix of both? Interesting question. A, it depends on medical test or doctor's evaluation. B, by noticing the pain worsens with stress or emotions. C, by identifying any physical injury or illness as the cause, which means if you have something that makes sense, you hurt because something happened, but if not, it's probably emotional. Or B, by observing both emotional triggers and physical symptoms together. These are the 4 questions. I'm just writing down the people that want to go live. I have a whole list over here. So, Stefan, it's going to be a long night.
No worries. I'm here.
Montreal time, you know. Figure, you know, it's going to be like, you know, it's 7 in the morning, so it'll be fine. Okay, we're going to end the poll. Everybody finish posting your answers to the best of your abilities, and we're going to share it. And then if Stefan has any comments on the polls, we'll do that. And then we'll jump into the live questions and the questions that came in. Here we go. You ready? Okay, now we're sharing with everybody. You can see it. First question, how do you understand the idea of connecting mind, body, and soul for the healing? 36% of people believe it means putting them all together in sync. Your thoughts, your feelings, and your body, it's all in sync. 90% feel balancing is it, and 40, most people believe it's focusing on knowing yourself, how these parts work together. So more like, I want to use the word like parts therapy, but sort of like you understanding how they work, even though you're not actually putting them together in sync. Stefan, any comment on this poll?
So the majority of people feel that it focuses on yourself and how these parts work together, right?
Mm-hmm.
Me, the question means that we have to work really hard at it. And I want to kind of debunk that and let you know that connecting mind, body, and soul isn't that hard. It's actually quite simple. If we're able to just stop and breathe, notice our breath, and then notice what's going on in our body, and we do that for 30 seconds. It doesn't have to be super long, but even 30 seconds of just being aware of what's happening right here, right now, everything kind of aligns. The mind slows down, the body kind of relaxes, and that's when we start hearing notices, soul messages or spiritual messages. So sometimes it takes a little more than 30 seconds, but it doesn't have to be so difficult, right? So the third answer, it focuses on knowing yourself and how these parts work together. Of course, I mean, I'm a psychologist. I'm going to tell you to learn about yourself and to focus on who are you and what you like and what makes you you. But that's more of a mental pursuit, right? It's an intellectual pursuit. I'm going to invite you to just keep it simple. Like, how can you connect inwards as opposed to just keep things in your head? Well, that's what I have to say about that.
Second question, have you ever experienced integration? Have you ever experienced like when you saw things were singing? So 46% of the people said, yeah, they actually felt it. 15% yes, but didn't understand it. 40% no, they never felt it, but they're very interested in exploring it.
Mm-hmm.
Let's go to the next one, Stefan.
Mm-hmm.
What do you believe is the biggest challenge in integrating mind, body, soul, and therapy? So you're the therapist and you're doing this for years. So this is what people say, and then you can give your comment. Lack of awareness about the connection, 13%, 24% difficulty connecting to the body sensations. Most people, 39%, resistant to emotional vulnerability, that wall that stops us. 24% balancing all three simultaneously. So it's a pretty mixed answer, to be honest with you, but it seems like resistance by far is winning.
So resistance is definitely a factor that gets people to, you know, block and avoid going deep. But we also have to understand that the resistance to emotional vulnerability is often due because there's been trauma in the past. And it doesn't feel safe for them to open up about this topic, to go into this topic, to feel into their emotions, to go into their body and what is what's going on. There's a resistance there, right? And the resistance is because I don't feel safe. So whenever I have a client who has an emotional vulnerability, a resistance to emotional vulnerability, I don't just like throw it on them and say, oh, you're resistant, something's blocking you. It's like, okay, I can understand that you're feeling uncomfortable about this. Where does that come from? What does that remind you of? How can we make you feel more safe, right? We have to feel safe in order to heal. The first recipe to healing is safety. So that would be, that's a common one. The emotion, the resistance, emotional vulnerability is a challenge. But I also think that people don't understand what it is. They don't understand what integration is. And we also live in a world where everything is separate. So when you go see a doctor, even the doctor is like, there's a doctor for the heart, there's a doctor for the head, there's a doctor for the foot, there's a doctor for the lung. Every doctor is different. Everything is separate, right? We look at things in very compartmentalized ways. That's our society. We don't look at things from an integration point of view, from a mind, body, spirit or mind, body, soul perspective. So we've been programmed that. And even doctors are like, oh, you feel this, it's all in your head, don't worry. Well, yeah, it's in the head. Of course it's in the head, but it's also in my body. So there's a physical component and then there's an emotional component. And that's going to go into the next question, if I can jump into that, is that sometimes there's a...
You want to go to question number four?
Yeah.
Let me just read it because people that are just listening in or people that will listen to it later, they can't see it. So let me read it and then jump into it.
Beautiful.
Some experiences pain in their body. How to determine if it's physical, emotional, or mix of both? The million-dollar question. So only 5% of people trust medical tests and doctor's evaluations. We have a big trust in the medical system, obviously, especially in Canada. 21% of people by noticing if the pain worsens by stress or emotion. 4%, that means almost nobody believes by identifying any physical injury or illness as the cause. 69% of people by observing both emotional triggers and physical symptoms together. Stefan, take it away.
So there's most of the time, there's a physical and emotional expression of something that's happening, right? When you have a headache, it's not just a physical thing. There's often an emotional component. When you have a health condition that's more severe, there's most likely an emotional component to it. But obviously, there's a physical expression of it. How much is which? That becomes independent. That becomes separate. Sometimes we have to look at the person's lifestyle. Sometimes it's mainly physical, but most of the time the work that I've seen, work that I do, is that there's an emotional component that helps people. When you understand that there's an emotional component, it gives people a sense of control because we can do something about the feelings we can help them deal with emotions better. And by helping them deal with emotions better, their physical expression of it changes. So it's both, but it depends on the person. Some people, you know, I see a client and they're coming in because they have a health problem. I know for sure it's emotional because that's what every time they come in, it's emotional. Sometimes people come in and it's mainly physical. So we just have to tune into the body and see what it says.
Okay, Stefan, that was the easy part. Now let's get into it, okay?
Let's now do it.
Create your mind, body, and soul. Here we go. Hi.
Hi, thank you for taking my question.
Sure.
I wanted to ask, how do you learn to trust the images or scenes that come up when asking your symptoms what they want to tell us?
How do you, let me ask you a question again. How do you trust what the body is saying as being real? Is that what you're saying?
Correct.
Okay, thank you for that. So when you start trusting the body and you start listening and you come from a place where you're quiet, in other words, you're breathing, you're relaxed, you're calm, and you're allowing for the message to come through the body will never lie. If you're busy and you're running and you're jogging and you're whatever, you're too busy and your mind is thinking about a lot of things and you're trying to connect, if you hear something, it's probably your mind that's creating that. So we have to be careful. Is this my mind making this up or is this my body that's purely expressing itself? So the difference is when the mind, and this is the same thing with, I get a lot of questions about, is this intuition or is this my mind telling me this? Intuition is based in the body. And when you get a message from the body, it's an intuitive message. It's a gentle kind of knock on the door. And if you don't pay attention to it, it dissipates and disappears and it's gone. If you hear something that's loud and knocking on the door very loudly, it's most often your mind that's thinking that. So that's why in order to connect to the body and trust what the body's saying, we really need to learn how to quiet the mind by doing some relaxation techniques or meditation or prayer or breathing or whatever it is, movement. And once we are quieter in our mind, then we can trust the body's message and its expression. And then very important to do when your body is expressing itself to thank it because you're reinforcing it. Again, think of it as a shy little toddler that's coming and raising their hand and saying, could you pay attention to me for a little moment? And so, of course, I'm going to pay attention to you. I love you. I care for you. What's important for you? What's going on, honey? As you do that, you're giving the message to your body that you are important to me. You matter. And so that acknowledgement makes the body want to share more information. I hope that answers.
Here. Okay. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Okay. Let's go to the next question. Hi.
Hi. Thank you. About 17 years ago, I had a very stressful episode at my new job. And I developed shortness of breath, and I still have it. So mm-hmm. I feel like I'm on a fight or flight response mm-hmm. all the time. Mm-hmm. I have shallow breaths, and it's hard for me to take a deep breath, especially when I'm at work and I, you know, have a like high-paced environment. So mm-hmm. I just wanted to get your feedback as to, you know, what tips can you give me to, you know, to get my breath back, basically. And not to be in that fight or flight response all the time.
What a great question. It sounds like you're very aware of what goes on in your body already. So when we go into trauma, when we experience something that's very difficult, our body goes to a stuck response. Like you said, a fight or flight response. So for those who don't know what a fight or flight is, when you have a moment of stress that's so acute, that your body, your brain is trying to decide, should I run or should I fight? And it doesn't know what to do and it just freezes. And then that energy gets locked into the body, into the brain, the brain called, the gland called the amygdala, And then the body response is to hold or to contract. And what contracted maybe in your case is the muscle called the diaphragm, which separates the thorax from the abdomen. And so when the diaphragm, which is normally an upside down U or upside down V, it's supposed to move like this, right? Up and down when I breathe in, when I breathe out. But when we are in a state of tension and stress, all the muscles of our body tighten up. And your diaphragm, instead of moving like this, became like a wall. It blocked. So that means that your breathing is going to be shallow, like you said, and it's going to breathe into your upper chest. So right underneath the clavicle in your upper chest. But what we should be doing is breathing from our belly. So below the diaphragm, okay? Below what we call the sternum. So underneath the ribcage. Ideally, the breath should be breathing from here. So if you do a little test, just a very simple test, we can all do this. You can just put one hand on your chest and one hand on your belly, and then you'll see when you're breathing in and out, which hand moves more. Is it the hand on top or is it the hand on the belly? The hand on top moves a lot. That means that you're going into a fear response. That means your brain is thinking you're in a dangerous situation. Even if you're not, you can be in a very safe environment. You know it's safe. You can be in your bedroom at home with nothing going on. Everything is safe. It's your house, your bedroom. You have full control. But if you're breathing from your chest, your brain is saying, I'm in danger. And so your brain's going to look around and say, why am I in danger?
You could breathe actually technically from your chest and not from your stomach. You could do more from your chest than from your stomach.
So, yeah. So the idea is we want to breathe more from the belly. Because if you're breathing from the belly, you're sending the message to the brain that says, I'm actually safe.
So one second, I'm sorry for disturbing you, but is that why they say when somebody's having a panic attack or in that mode, they should take deep breaths?
So when people are having panic attacks, they're breathing too fast and too shallow from their chest. And they're breathing with the mouth. Okay, so actually the advice to give to people is not to take deeper breaths. Actually, to take slow, regular breath through the nose, close your mouth. I tell my clients, when you're in trouble, shut your mouth and breathe from your nose and then bring the air to the belly, not from the chest. So for the listener who asked a wonderful question, if you notice that you're breathing from your chest, learn to work on your diaphragm muscle. Learn to relax the diaphragm muscle. So you can do that by lying down flat on your bed, for example, and then putting a weight on your belly, just over the belly button, and make the weight go up and down as you breathe. So your weight's training your diaphragm, you're helping your diaphragm to loosen up a little bit. And by doing that, you're going to learn how to breathe deeper, but deeper into the lower part of the lungs and not from the upper part of the chest. That way, you'll be having more of a relaxation response as opposed to a stress response. So I hope that helps. Sometimes, when it's been so long, you mentioned 17 years, if you're still breathing that way, you might need a little bit of help from an osteopath or a physiotherapist that can help loosen up the muscles in your diaphragm. Because if they're closed, jammed like that, and you're trying to breathe deeper, you can't because it's jammed. So you might need a little bit of massaging to help relax that muscle area. A great question.
Thank you.
Excellent. Let's go to the next one. Hi, you're on.
Hi. Thank you for taking my question. So I'm actually really very grateful to Asher Parnas that he did this topic, and I'm grateful to you that you came on. This is actually a passion of mine, this topic. I read a lot of books on this. And this is, I know, a kind of a controversial topic in the extent of how much everyone, I mean, even the science world does agree there is a mind-body connection, as far as I know. But like when it comes to soul and spirit, since it can't be seen under an X-ray MRI machine, right? There is a mind-body connection, and then there are those that hold of a mind-body-spirit connection. I just want to know, first of all, this whole technique which you use, is it more of a therapeutic thing or what we call the energetic thing? And what is the difference? What additional factor is there by combining the spirit if, you know, we could just say mind-body? And I know, you know, in science,
there's, in terms of healing, some say, let's say the placebo effect could only help with symptoms. Some say it could heal completely. Some say it's, you know, it's not really, it's only artificial. So I'm just getting it overall. Like, why do we need this spirit part? And is this more of a therapeutic thing or is it an energetic thing? And if a client would come to you that doesn't believe in the spirit, so like, how would you help them out?
Okay, good question. A lot of pieces to that, so I'll try my best to answer those questions. For me, it's all a question of awareness, right? So how aware are you? How aware are you of your breath? How aware are you of your heartbeat? How aware are you of the smells in the room around you? How aware are you of the sounds you hear? What's going on in your body right now? What's happening in your right knee? What's happening in your left foot? What's happening in the middle of your back? Like, we don't pay attention to these things unless we're invited to or think about that. So it helps to have a deeper level of focus. When we have awareness, it creates a deeper level of understanding. So if I tune into the sensation in my back, I'll have cues to what I'm feeling. I'll have cues to messages that are trying to come through to me. So you can interpret it like, this is my soul speaking, this is my body speaking, this is my inner child speaking, this is a part of me that expresses itself in this way. It doesn't really matter. It's just really about connection, right? How connected, how aware of you, of what's going on inside of you and around you. And so I don't want to complicate things, but it's really, when I do a mindfulness exercise, I invite people, first of all, to notice how they're breathing. And then I tell them, notice the sounds you hear outside around you. Little sounds, the sounds of the lights, the sounds of the heater, the sound of the car passing by. And then they notice their body. Notice your seat. Notice your back. Notice your feet. And then it becomes, okay, now notice your thoughts. What's your mind doing? Where is your mind taking you? So it's integrating all these different pieces, integrating the environment, integrating the physical expression of it. And then we go into the mind, which is a little harder sometimes to capture. What is my mind doing? It's easier to hear the sounds outside. It's hard to pay attention to where my mind is at all times. So it's a process. I call it layering, where you start with the physical, then you bring in the environmental or the experiential, the experiential around me, and then it becomes the mind. So in a mindfulness exercise, I would say start by feeling your feet on the floor. Start by feeling your seat. What do you notice in your back? How are you breathing? Okay, so physical, what we call grounding, because we always start, when we work in holistic health, whatever the field is, we always want to ground the body. We want to start with a physical grounding, make sure you're safe. Okay, so if we ground the body, we're safe. Now we can go to the higher levels. Okay, what does my ears tell me? What does my eyes tell me? What does my skin tell me in terms of sensation? What do I notice? And then I can go into my mind. What is my mind doing? What am I noticing? What am I thinking about? What am I feeling? Okay, so it's the same concept in therapy, where when a client comes in for the first time and they have anxiety or panic attacks, let's say, the first thing I want to get them to do is, okay, let's calm down. Let's make sure you feel the floor. Imagine that you have roots coming out underneath your feet, like seriously roots from a tree. Feel your seat. Like, imagine that you're not going to fly away, like you're grounding. So in the physical grounding, they feel safer. As soon as they feel safer, their level of anxiety drops, right? Because their anxiety, especially panic attacks, is the disconnection to ground, the disconnection to earth. Okay, so if I'm disconnected to earth, I'm going to ground, I'm going to root, just like a tree. When you pull it out of the earth, it's not going to survive very long.
what does it need? It wants earth. It wants to feel earth and rocks around it so it can feel safe. So that's what we do. And then after the process of grounding and calming the body, then we can notice, okay, what's going on in your life that you're so stressed? I'm stressed with school. I'm stressed with my husband. I'm stressed with the kids. I'm stressed. I've got too much going on. Okay, let's see if we can work with that. And then what are the thoughts about those things? What are you thinking about? How can we change those thoughts so they can be more adaptive, more supportive, more helpful? And then the process happens again. It's another layer. It's another layer. It's another layer. Eventually it gets where they don't have anxiety, or when the anxiety starts coming on, that's their body's way of saying, okay, watch out now. You're going down this rabbit hole. You've gone through this before. That's not the best way. You know this. Let's try the other behavior. Let's try the other techniques that we've learned. And that helps them not to have the panic attacks again, but actually to have feelings of more mastery in their life. So everything we learn from the little simple mindful exercise has major repercussions on how we run therapy and how an individual needs to come in touch with themselves. So even if I haven't worked with a client, let's say a couple of years, and they come back and say, you know, Stefan, you really helped me the first time. I used to have severe panic attacks. Well, now they're coming back. And the first thing I tell them is say, where did you disconnect from? Are you rooting? Are you doing your body work? Are you grounding? Are you breathing? What's going on in your environment? What's going on in your mind? And then it's just, oh yeah, that's true. I forgot. Okay. Well, try that and see how you feel. And that's usually enough to remind them.
Amazing. That could be new concepts for a lot of people. And here's a question that somebody sent in. I've been dealing with chronic neck pain for a while and tried many different modalities. Some help for a short period. How do I figure out what my body is telling me with all this illness? So it's really, you know, we discussed it, but for beginners, really to really listen to how, you know, how do we figure out what's really bothering, what's going on?
So, I mean, chronic neck pain can be a number of different things, right? Sometimes it's just, I have a really bad pillow, right? And if I don't use the right pillow, we're going to have neck pain. So sometimes that's simple as changing the pillow.
Mm.
But, you know, you would notice these things, especially if it's, you have it more than the chronic neck pain in the morning, more than the afternoon or evening. But if it's chronic during the day, afternoon and night, and it's always the case and nothing seems to make it better, then we have to understand, okay, what's going on in the neck? So for sure, getting an x-ray, getting checked out by a doctor or a chiropractor or so forth, they can see if there's any issues there with a vertebra. But from the emotional point of view, I would look at it like, what is the function of the head, of the neck, I should say. So whenever I have a client who has a specific location in the body where there's a pain, I say, what's the function of that organ or that part? So the neck separates the head from the heart. Okay. And so that means there's something that I'm thinking about and something that I feel. And they're not together. They're discordant. So it could be, for example, I want to stay with my husband because I love my family. But my mind is saying, I don't want to be with this person anymore. So my mind is saying one thing. My heart is saying something else. And then my neck doesn't know where to go. And it causes tension in the neck. And sometimes, but if that's the case, I'm just giving a general example. If that's the case, working on that issue and coming up with a decision may resolve that pain altogether. But think of it as your neck pain is giving you a message that there's something going on that doesn't feel right. And then you can connect to that neck pain by talking about what's going on in your world, by going into the neck pain. So I use hypnosis, for example, or a technique called body talk, where we go into the body part and we become the neck and we speak like we are that body part. And then we have a discussion with a neck and say, hey, neck, what's going on? Why are you in so much pain? Why are you driving this person crazy? This is really painful. Why are you still there? What's your function? And they become the neck, and you'd be so amazed at the kind of answers that comes out of their mouth on behalf of the neck or that body part. And the person listens, obviously, to what they're saying, and then often like, oh my God, I can't believe this is what's really happening. And then when we address the causes, often the symptom disappears.
Is it possible that people ask the questions and no answers come up? It's blank and it's just not working.
Yeah, absolutely. Sometimes it's a question, I'm not ready to deal with these things. I'm not ready to deal with what my body is telling me. I don't want to hear it because that means I'm going to have to change something. I'm not willing to change. And so that's okay. So that means the person either doesn't feel safe enough, or they're not ready enough, or we're just tackling it from a different, we need to tackle it from a different perspective. So sometimes it's a question of timing. Sometimes it's a question of going at it from a different perspective or a different tool.
Mm-hmm.
And I do the same thing, by the way, if a client has, sometimes they have cancer, for example, right? So sometimes we go into the tumor directly. And with the hypnosis that I use something called transformational fantasy. It's an imagery exercise based on hypnosis where they close their eyes or relax or in a deep trance, and then they become the cancer cells. So they become the tumor and they start talking from the tumor. Why are you here? What are you expressing? What do you need? What's going on for you? What was the purpose of you being in the body? What are you expressing? What is a person? What is your host not paying attention to? What do they need to do? And by connecting to that part of them, the cancer is still a part of their body. It's not this foreign invader that just came in. It's not a virus that came from outside. It's from inside. The cells of our body starts changing. It's my cells. Why did my cells start changing in a way that's not concordant with the rest of the body? Why? So once we understand that, it's kind of like if you have 5 kids and one of them all of a sudden is in a bad mood. Everybody else is happy. Why are you in a bad mood? What's going on for you? So we need to stop. We need to pay attention. We need to listen. We need to ask the question and notice what's going on for that child, or for that cell or that part of our body that's missing something or needing something. It's very powerful.
Amazing. Well, Juan, let's go to the next live question. Hi, you're on.
Great, thank you. It's interesting that you brought up hypnosis. I was something I'm curious about. I have had, I guess what they call complex trauma in my life. And just in short, lost my father as a toddler, lost my mother senior year of high school when I was 17, happily married for many years, although with lots of work. I had a stillborn child at 37 weeks. Pretty traumatic, got to the hospital, baby had a heartbeat, and suddenly I needed an emergency C-section. And when I woke up and I asked, where's my baby? It was clear he didn't make it. So I got to hold and mourn that baby. And, less than a year ago, my husband passed away. And we're in our 40s. So, lots of trauma. Now, I've been blessed with, being pretty, analytical and intuitive and insightful. And I can give that to myself. That's not like, Hashem just made me that way. But, in the earlier years where I'd done therapy, and I'm a big believer of good therapy, the intellect and my way of, thinking through stuff got in the way of feeling emotions, acknowledging the emotions, you know, that was like a defense mechanism to just, you know, intellectualize or rationalize or decide whether it makes sense or doesn't make sense, if it's logical or not logical to feel a certain way as opposed to just feeling that way. And so that was many, many, many years ago. And I would say that in the, I had attempted to do trauma work in the recent past, and it's really, really, really hard to bypass the brain. Even with all of the emotional development and awareness and vulnerability that I am, have been and am able to be in, right? You know, it was actually, I went to like a trauma, somatic trauma therapy, and it was actually really aggravating. Like extremely aggravating to ask my body or to ask this body part, you know, why, where, what are you feeling? And not to get into thoughts and not to get into a narrative and not to get into, and I quit that honestly because it was causing me anxiety going there. So not going there, but attempting to do something that I had a very hard time doing. It was very frustrating. So now to the question, okay. Question is, if you're very aware of the sensations in your body and you're aware of the thoughts, the beliefs, the lack of safety, that the world isn't, you know, that the ground could actually open up and we're not standing on steady ground. I'm saying that as a belief, okay, but it's a reality that I live with. And I'm sure many people in Eretz Yisrael right now are living with that reality of that the ground is not solid. Any day, any time, it can open up and swallow you. Mm-hmm. So that is a reality that you live in. And someone with post-trauma, you know, someone who's experienced trauma is hyper, you know, hyper alert to that. Mm-hmm. And so when you address the body and then you bring your thoughts into it and you have that dialogue, and at the end of that dialogue, you really understand each other, but it's still there. The safety isn't there. The beliefs that you have are still there. So I'm wondering, can hypnosis, help you bypass any of this? I've wondered in the past, can I just get rewired? Is there a way we can just like rewire some things?
So Stefan, are you familiar with like a lobotomies or anything that we could do to like? I just want to understand, clarify your question. Is your question, I want to clarify. Is it because you've been through so much, even when you're connecting all these things at the end of the day, there's so much pain there. It's not really being helpful in any way.
I guess. I mean, I'm highly functional. I've suffered in the last number of years with IBS, so that's just really, really annoying. I still get flare-ups. If anything, my go-to is not as much anxiousness all the time, or maybe even when I feel anxious, sometimes I can detach and just dissociate. So that's also a response of shutting down. So I don't like that. I want to live fully. I don't want to always be trying to get through. So my question is, what role does hypnosis, is this a place for hypnosis? Where, at what point do you employ that treatment? When do you determine that that is what your client needs or could benefit from? Is it after they've exhausted all other, you know, modalities? What can you advise?
That's a great question, and thank you for your story and sharing that and being vulnerable with us. To me, it sounds like you're a pretty resilient individual, having gone through all these issues and traumas, and to be able to continue functioning and being able to be here with us and tell us the story without feeling overly emotional, that's a sign of your strength, right? And so I want to just, again, emphasize your inner strength, your resilience, your capacity to heal, and look at whatever you're experiencing in the body as just
kind of residual experience of what happened from the past. So there's been a lot of trauma. There's been a lot of emotion around it. You're doing the best that you can, and your conscious and your unconscious are working hard to stay and find a balance point. And that's what's allowing you to function. When you start messing with the unconscious, when you start messing with what's going on at a deeper level, you're going to create a disharmony, which will cause anxiety, just like you saw at the somatic workshop. So there's always the question of, do I really need to do this? Do I really want to do this? What's the benefit?
This sounded very annoying because I couldn't do it.
Okay. So, but the question is like, why do you want to do this trauma work? Why do you want to do this trauma release work? If you're functioning well and you're doing okay in life, maybe it's better to leave it alone. If it's causing you the IBS, it's causing you distress, so it's coming out in different ways, different times, then I would start looking at those moments when it's kind of poking through and seeing that's your entrance point to helping you deal with that. So if, for example, every time you turn on the radio, you listen to music, for example, and the song reminds you of your husband, and then you start tearing and you miss him, then that becomes your entry point. You go into the feeling and you connect to that. So hypnosis, to answer your question, can definitely be a very useful tool. Keep in mind that hypnosis, all hypnosis is self-hypnosis. It's not the therapist that has the control or the power over you. It's you that has control. You decide what you're willing to do, what you're willing to see or not see. And then what hypnosis does, like some of the psychedelics do, is they bring you into an altered state where your conscious mind, your ego, we call that the ego, doesn't play such a big role anymore. So you can quiet the mind a little bit so you can go down and do some of that healing work. So anything that quiets the mind, meditation, hypnosis, any other kind of breath work, for instance, even psychedelics, now we're seeing benefits of, if it helps quiet the mind, it can allow you to go deeper into the healing. But once again, like, you found a place in your world where you're functioning and you're doing okay. Before you start messing around with it, you better really be ready to handle whatever is going to come up. Because maybe you don't need to. Maybe your mind and your body are very wise and they found that handling it this way is what's the safest thing for you. So sometimes with health clients, it's not in your advantage to do that. If you're not willing to rock the boat, if you're not willing to deal with some of the side effects of this, because there are going to be side effects, then I don't want to work with you in hypnosis, or I don't want to work with you on this. Let's work on other stuff. Let's work on grounding. Let's work on keeping you safe. Let's help you find a way to change your belief about the world, that the earth is not going to open up and swallow you. That's a pretty scary thought if that's what your mind is telling you. How do we change that? How do we get you to feel safe? That's where I would start. The rest, the hypnosis, changing the story, the narrative, of course that's useful, but it's secondary to you feeling safe and strong. I hope I answered your question.
In general,
thank you. I appreciate it. I can't dominate this wonderful time that you're giving all of us. I do have more questions, but I appreciate what you gave me to think about. Thank you.
In general, about grief, some people don't want to go to those spaces, and it's too hard, so they rather, you know, intellectualize and keep on going. How would you, if somebody walks into the office for whatever reason, how would you deal with the grief?
So remember, everything has a function, right? And sometimes when we're overly in our minds, that's still a coping mechanism that the mind has in order to deal with what's difficult in our world. So sometimes having a busy mind is what takes us away from the pain that we feel deep inside that we're not able to or not willing to or scared of opening up. right? So it's not necessarily a bad thing. Same thing with people with ADHD sometimes. Many people with ADHD, I'm not saying all of them, but many people have had certain types of trauma, certain types of areas where they dissociate. And they dissociate from a reality that's very painful. When their parents are screaming and there's a lot of chaos in the house, sometimes a child will dissociate because I don't want to think about it. I don't want to hear about it. It's too much. It's too painful. There's nothing I can do. So they just tune it out. And guess what? When they're in school, as soon as the teacher raises her voice, they tune out. Or as soon as there's too much noise in the hallway, they tune out. And then guess what? They can't function in school. They have trouble learning. And then they get tested and we give them ADHD as a label. Sometimes the ADHD is just learned reaction from trauma response. So we have to understand that everything that presents itself has a function, has a role to play. And is adaptive. So before we label it and judge it and say it's bad, like, let's try to understand, okay, what's happening here? Why did the mind and the body choose this expression of it at this time? What's the function? And before I remove it, let me see if I can figure something that's a little deeper that can replace its function.
So you're saying even before going to the idea that I want to live, I want to integrate my mind, body, and soul. Mm-hmm. Even before going there, there's a step before that. Many times a step before that. Don't try right away. No, I got to integrate. Let's see what's going on. Maybe you're not ready. You're doing what you're doing for a reason.
Absolutely. There's always a risk, right? So we have to be willing to face the risk. So for example, if I start exploring my passions and my dreams and my reason for living, and if I feel like I have a purpose that's beyond this thing that I'm doing, okay, great. But be careful, because in a few months you might want to leave your job. And are you ready to do that? Are you willing to shake up your foundation? Are you willing to lose your job to perhaps find your passion? Maybe you are, but if you're not willing to do that, let's be careful. Let's not open up a can of worms that we're not ready to deal with. Right? So it's always important to talk about the risk factors of everything that we do, whether it's therapy in general, counseling, or hypnosis. Before I do any hypnosis with the clients, I explain to them the benefits, but I also explain to them the potential risks that may be involved. And some of the risk could be like, you might have more anxiety. Like, I know you want to reduce your anxiety, but you might have more anxiety. This might open up something for you. We don't know ahead of time necessarily what's going to happen. The unconscious is mysterious. So are you ready to tackle that? I'm here with you. I'm holding your hand. I'll be here with you. You can count on me to be here, but are you ready to tackle some of these things that you're not necessarily aware of right now?
Okay. Fun. This has been powerful. Let's go to the next live question, okay?
Absolutely.
Hi, you're on.
Hi. So what I'm hearing is a lot about mindfulness, and being present. So I'm not sure myself if I'm being mindful, if I'm being too much in my own head, but like, I feel things very deeply, and like, I'm aware of my sensations or where I'm feeling tension, my thoughts. But sometimes I feel like I'm in my head too much, but sometimes I'm not sure I'm not on autopilot, but I feel like, I don't know, I'm just like, is there such a thing as being too, like feeling too much? Should I be less mindful? Like, I'm not even sure where I stand with that.
So it may be that the amplifier is on too loud, right?
What do you mean by the amplifier?
It's like you're listening to music at a very, very loud volume. Whether it's happy music or sad music, it's just very loud, right? So when you're listening to your thoughts, there's a lot of them. It's very loud. When you're listening to your feelings, you have a lot of loudness too. They're present in a very significant way. And to you, I would just invite you to kind of work at
just disconnecting from the mind and the body and just focus on just breathing. And if that's too stressful or if you're still getting too much physical things, then do something physical like walking or running or cycling or swimming or yoga, some sort of physical modality where you're actually moving. So you're out of your head, not thinking so much, and your body is busy doing something. And as your body's busy doing something, you're less engaged to what you're supposed to be thinking or doing. And you're just in the action of doing. So, for instance, sometimes I teach a technique called passive relaxation. That's when I guide a client through just a breathing awareness of what's going on in the body and how they're feeling and relaxing and releasing any tension in their body. So for about 80% of clients, it works very well. For 20%, it actually increases levels of anxiety for some of those people, because increasing awareness to the body sensations, especially for trauma survivors, actually is worse. It's not what they want. But what we do with those types of clients is give them another relaxation technique called active relaxation, where they're actually creating tension in their body, holding their fist, closing their fist, squeezing, and then releasing, and then lifting the shoulders, holding, and then releasing. So there's a sequence that we teach that works very, very well, but they like that better, that 20% like that better because they have control and they feel that they have the ability of doing something as opposed to just listening to something guiding them. They prefer doing something. They prefer being in control. So if that's who you are, you like to be kind of aware, you like to be in control, maybe some sort of body work or active relaxation. So it used to be called progressive muscular relaxation. That might be a little bit more suitable to you.
Right.
Does that answer your question?
Yeah. So you're saying to do with say progressive muscular relaxation as opposed to let's say just quote unquote be mindful. Is that what you're saying or?
Yeah. So there is a small percentage of people where mindfulness does not work for them. For the majority of people, mindfulness actually helps to make them feel safe, makes them feel relaxed and quiets the mind and helps them transcend to another level and they feel peaceful. There is a small percentage of people where mindfulness actually does not work and actually increases their level of symptoms and distress. It's not very common, but there are people who experience that. So if that's the case for you, then mindfulness is maybe not something you might want to do.
Right.
Like I said, do more body work, more centered around like physical activity, yoga or exercise or qigong or anything that you like where your body's moving and flowing.
Right. So we need to get me out of my head. Like, so I'm not thinking so much, like bring me, like to bring me out of my body, but really to bring me in, back inside. It's like, yeah. Right.
Exactly. And then sometimes, you might find certain types of touch really helps you a lot. So being held by someone that really cares for you, just a long hold, a long hug, a long embrace, or being massaged by someone that you feel 100% safe with, that can be very, very nourishing for you. So that's something that you may want to explore, the role of touch in a very gentle and safe way.
Yeah, okay. Thanks so much. Thank you.
With that, you're welcome.
Rupan, let's go to this question. Thank God I come from a large family with a variety of issues that come along with raising children of various ages. How does one put aside the emotions that come along with daily letdowns, pressures, child sicknesses, making a living, teenage moodiness, and be able to focus on being calm and happy for one's spouse, friends, and family? So the question, the million-dollar question is, how do we deal with all the struggles in life at the same time being able to put them in a box when we want to tune into ourselves or to our spouse or to have a good time?
Yeah, that's a very common experience, isn't it? There's a busyness, especially when we have a large family. There's a lot of different pieces that are moving.
and we have to deal with all the different people.
A lot of people, when that happens, that becomes like who they are, even when they're not dealing with it. Like they become martyrs, or they become, mm-hmm. like even when the kids are not around, and even when they're on vacation, they're just not in that mode of being, okay, we're not dealing with it now, and let's just enjoy our lives.
And I like how you said that. I'm not dealing with it now. So where is your mind? What is your mind doing right here, right now? And sometimes I'll catch a client when they're going into their rant about their stress and their worry. And I stop them. I say, hold on a second. Tell me, what's going on in your right foot? And they stop and say, what? Yeah, tell me, how's your right foot feeling right now? And they answer my questions. It's fine. It's relaxed or whatever. I say, okay. What's going on right now? What are you thinking about? And then they just say, well, I'm just thinking about why you're asking me about the foot. I said, so now that you're thinking about this, you're not thinking about your worries anymore. So moment to moment awareness, we can stop and we can change our mind from going into whatever story that it needs to go through. So if I'm dealing with a child with fever, I'm dealing with a child with fever and I'm taking care of him or her at that moment. When I leave the child, I'm focusing on where I'm at. If I'm back in my bed, I'm focusing on the sensations of my comforter against me. So let's see if we can train our mind to be where we truly are. So if I'm in another room, another space, another place, focus on what's happening at that moment and not what happened earlier or what will happen later. I know it's easier said than done, but we can train the mind with mindfulness, as we said, to really not get stuck in the narrative, get stuck in the story that brings me back into the suffering. Because it's not taking care of the child with a fever that's suffering. It's not mentally suffering to do that. We're just taking care of the child. We do what we have to do. It's the next day and the day after that, and we start wondering and worrying and feeling stuck and feeling how come it's always me. It's always, how come it's not him that's getting up to take care of my child? How come it's always me? What if my child doesn't get better? What if it comes back? What if he's sick? What if it's worse? Then that's when the suffering happens, right? We need to be able to go and to just live in that moment. So moment to moment awareness, snap out of the narrative and the stories that your mind is trying to bring you to do and be. And so if you're able to be, when there's laughter, you'll be able to laugh. When there's joy, when there's happiness, when there's all kinds of beautiful things around, you'll be able to notice it and appreciate it. So we're only as free as where our mind is taking us. And if our mind keeps bringing us to difficult places and difficult emotions, then it's the mind that controls us. But who's in charge of the mind? You are. You can tell your mind, okay, that's enough already. I don't want to think about this now. Right now, I'm here with my family. Everybody's laughing. I want to smile and have fun. I'm here now. Okay? You can redirect your mind. You be the boss of your mind. Don't let the mind control you and direct you into stories that are there.
Do they need to go to therapy for this? A lot of people are sitting and thinking, oh, it sounds amazing, but it's not possible.
You know what? There's plenty of really good apps where you can learn mindfulness. That's really what I would start with. There's some YouTube videos that are great. There's some really good apps you can start. And then just by being aware, you can read some books like Power of Now, for instance. There's a lot of books by Jon Kabat-Zinn who wrote on mindfulness. I mean, now it's like a buzzword, mindfulness. I studied mindfulness back in the 80s when nobody ever talked about it. And I was the only person to talk about it, and everybody thought it was weird. now everybody's talking about mindfulness, and it's like the buzzword, it's mainstream, and like there's thousands and thousands of research articles on it. It's like, it's not weird anymore. So do a little search on mindfulness and you'll see what pops up.
Put a few minutes of mindfulness in your routine.
Mm-hmm.
Start practicing. Mm-hmm. Here's a question somebody sent in. I grew up in a very dysfunctional home. I have no sense of self. I'm fully dependent on my wife, and when she doesn't approve or mistreats me, I start feeling sick physically. Can't function. How do I start gaining a sense of self if I never got it when I grew up?
Yeah, that's a good question. And I would tell this individual not to get stuck in the narrative and the story. It's really just about finding a new sense of self. Who do I want to be? Who do I want to step in to be? What is my goal in life? Who is the person that I want to be? And so what do I need to do to be this person? What actions do I need to take? So it's kind of like driving, right? When we're driving, we're looking forward and we're looking at the windshield in front of us. We don't drive staring at the rearview mirror. You can glance at it from time to time, but it's not going to help you drive forward. So be careful when you stay stuck in this concept of growing up in a dysfunctional home. Like, most of us have had difficult homes. Most of us have had some issues in our childhood. You know, there's not a lot of people really that can honestly say that they had a very, very, very happy childhood. I would say, from what I've seen and what research has shown, is that 96% of people say they've grown up in a dysfunctional home. So 96%, I don't know about you and me, but for me, that's normal. 96% of people are doing this, and that's pretty normal. So it's normal to have grown up in a dysfunctional home. So stop making it your story. What do you want to do as of today? How do you want to live your life? What do you want to be a better human being? How do you live with passion, with power, with purpose? That's what I would tell them. And then, so gaining the sense of self is, for me, it's like you have carte blanche. You have this canvas that's blank. And it's like, what do you want to paint? Who do you want to become? Let's design it. Let's create it. Let's paint that. You know, so it's about letting go of the pain and the suffering and the dysfunctionalism and perhaps the abuse that we've grown up with, and saying, okay, this happened. It happened. So now what? Don't use it as an excuse to stop you from doing what you're supposed to be doing today.
Mm-hmm.
Does that make sense?
It does. I'm just thinking that many times people are stuck in their story.
Yes.
So we got to start slowly with some modalities.
Well, we call it the person's like narrative, like the person writes the story mm-hmm. of, you know, my life was so hard. My mm-hmm. parents were so difficult. There's truth to it, you know, but it's mm-hmm. like, it's like almost you write the narrative. Like, I mean, the famous thing that we all know is like, right, when you feel like, oh, God's again going against you or things are not going your way, things start not going your way, right? Mm-hmm. Like you're writing the narrative that you're going to get a job, you're going to get fired, then you get fired. Yeah. So
like a self-fulfilling prophecy.
People write about their life. I mean, that's a great question. I'll just ask it. Like, when somebody is in a terrible situation where things are going difficult and things are hard and they're having one difficulty after another, what advice would you give somebody as far as their mind, body, and soul to really rewire their feelings to realize that tomorrow is another beautiful day and everything could change? Like, how do you get out of that real negative cycle of everything is so bad?
So just like I said before about the physical symptom that appears in the body, we have to understand the function. So why would God give me such a difficult experience? Why would I do that? If God loves me, why would he cause me so much pain? That's a question I ask clients sometimes. Why would you have to deal with this? How does that make sense that you have to have so much pain in your life?
when his belief changes that God hates him.
Right. And so how do we understand it from a perspective that this is actually a good thing? Because now you're challenged and you're going to rise to the challenge and you're going to be a better person. And thanks to these experiences of pain and abuse, perhaps you're going to inspire others. Perhaps you're going to lead a revolution. Perhaps you're going to have more power and more strength and more resilience. You know, I think a lot of kids who have been bullied, if they get the proper support, grow up to be very powerful individuals, very successful individuals. There are some that don't get that proper support, and they grow up feeling victims, and they have a lot of difficulties in life. But those who work through their difficulties and work through their negative experiences, they have this fire in their belly, right? When they're being bullied, it's like they're saying to themselves, I'll show them who's boss. I'll show them I can do it. And they do. And that's transformational. So let's use some of that negative experience in a positive way as a force that's going to change me, that's going to inspire me to do even better. So how, don't get stuck in the negative. Let's turn that negative into something more powerful. It's energy. And energy can be shifted in so many different ways, right? It's the same energy. So it's kind of like, you know, I use this example sometimes with my clients, like when you go downhill skiing, you take a chairlift to the top of the mountain. And then you get off the chairlift and you go down and you look at the mountain and you have a couple of few different trails to choose from. And you can see this one that's really steep. And you're looking and say, oh my God, that is so steep. If I go down this hill, I'm going to kill myself. I'm going to break all my bones. I'm not going to be able to work tomorrow. I'm going to have to go to the hospital. But what's going on inside you is all this energy, all this pent up tension and stress. And then it's energy, right? You're thinking it's fear. But the next person that gets off the chair, might look at that and say, oh my God, what a thrill. This is incredible. I can't wait to show this mountain who's boss. I'm going to have the ride of my life. And they have the same physiological experiences in their body, heart beating fast, they're sweating, they're thrilled, but their mental aspect is they turn the fear into passion and power. And they go down that hill, they bomb down the hill, and they have a ride of their lives. Whereas the first person might feel more tentative, more scared to go down. And if they have to go down that trail, they'll be more careful, they might fall, they might hurt themselves. So the energy's there. Let's use it in a way that supports us. That's what I would do.
Okay. Let's go to this next question. Hi, can you unmute? Hold on. One second of that, we'll just go to another question.
Hello?
Yeah, hi.
Hi.
You're on.
Thanks for taking my question. Okay.
Mute again. Hi.
Can you hear me?
Yeah, you muted yourself.
Oh, sorry. So in general, I'm the type of person that experiences things very somatically, and I'm very aware of that. I work on that. I'm very familiar with, you know, the body keeping the score and all of that. My struggle ends up happening that my fear always of, you know, is this the body keeping a score or is it really something having, you know, health anxiety, a parent that suffered in health, has always been one of my fears. And when that fear comes up, then I'm not able to rationalize and say, you know, you've just, you know, experienced, you know, whether family members or whatever. I tend to be the caretaker and put out all fires. And somehow I guess my body keeps a score for everybody and, I pay for it. And knowing that, but then having the fear, you know, you go for testing and a doctor tells you, no, there's nothing wrong. So it alleviates that fear for a moment. And it doesn't take long for the fear to come back and say, maybe now really this is a health thing and it's not, you know, trying to balance the knowledge of, you know, all this can be keeping the score in your hips and, you know, sadness is stored here and this is stored there. And I'm, you know, familiar in this field a lot, but still have that struggle with the fear element of whether it really is, and that, you know, then the logic goes out the window.
Good. So your question would be?
My question is, how do you, knowing that I have a fear, but also knowing the knowledge of, a you know, the body keeping the score and experiencing things, how do you see past and say, you know, getting rid of that fear, and probably also that will help the body release what it's holding on to. But it's just here, I feel like it's creating more, and the fear of that is just adding on to it as well. Mm-hmm. So it's, how do you get rid of that fear element once and for all and say, you know, you've been through it once, you saw that didn't turn out into anything. This is another one of those things that are just being held on to, because I, you know, carry everybody's pains as well. I'm a very big empath. So.
You are so wise, and you're also very connected to your intuition and your body. And so I'm impressed with the fact that you have your body that's speaking to you so clearly, so loudly, and you're able to notice those messages. You can hear them very loud and clear, and you stop and you pay attention. The thing that's getting in your way is the fear. And the way to deal with that is to acknowledge the sensations and the messages that your body is coming out with, how they're expressing it, and be curious as opposed to frightened. The fear is what brings you into what if something bad happens, what if something bad were to happen to me, I wouldn't be able to be as responsible or as present for my family. Or myself, perhaps. And I would invite you to kind of not be afraid of the messages, but actually welcome the messages. So when your hip is talking to you, go inside of your hip and say, hi, hip, what's going on? What are you trying to tell me? What do I need to know? And then really be quiet inside and pay attention to whatever message that comes through. And whatever the message that you hear, acknowledge it, thank it, welcome it. If there's something to be done about it, do something, but just listening to it and attending to it is often enough for the sensation to kind of dissipate fairly quickly after that. Mm-hmm. Sometimes there's something beyond that. Sometimes you have the initial emotion and then you tune into that. And then behind that, there's another wave of a different kind of emotion. And behind that, there's another. Sometimes it happens like that. But all you do is you sit and you hold space for that experience. And then you let the symptom express itself. You listen to it. And then you kind of allow yourself to go through those different waves. But as soon as you go into fear, then your body goes into block and resistance and it contracts. And once it contracts, that's when you lose the message. That's when it's almost like your body's saying, okay, she's too scared of this. I won't be able to tell her. So you need to kind of work with that fear, because the fear is not coming from your body. The fear is coming from your ego. And your mind is telling you to be afraid because, oh my God, what if something bad is really happening? What if I'm neglecting something? That's not your body. That's not your inner wisdom talking to you. That's your mental fear that you may have been programmed for whatever reason from wherever.
Mm-hmm.
And you can listen to it and you can say, okay, fear, I hear you, but right now I'm tuning into my app, so leave me alone for the next half hour.
Mm-hmm.
You can be kind of funny that way with your body and just pay attention without letting the fear kind of take over. So you'll see that you can actually have some very interesting conversations with your body and your body parts. And if you're able to cultivate curiosity rather than fear.
Mm-hmm.
Does that make sense?
Yep.
And then after a while, you're going to become so attached with your inner healing resources that you'll know exactly what you need to do to rebalance. And you're going to be your own doctor. You won't need to go to the doctor for much. You're going to trust your inner healing abilities. And that's what's going to guide you as opposed to what some external voice is telling you you should do.
Yeah, I'm often able to do that for others. But when it comes to my own, I struggle with that, you know.
Yeah, most empaths have healing abilities, and I'm sure you do. So now you know when something's off with your child or a family member, and you know exactly what they need. So you just need to tune into that inner side to your body, because those parts of you are talking very loudly. You're listening. Yes,
they are. Thank you.
You're very welcome. Have fun with it.
Thanks. Appreciate your wisdom.
Tom, before we go like to the last question toward the end, I just want to ask some general questions. Do you, like in your, like, you know, a lot of people have irritable bowel syndrome and they have these constant minor pains here and there. Would you openly say that you believe most of this is internal pain or coming from something else? Or you believe there's such a concept of irritable bowel syndrome? People just have, you know, they eat something, their stomach hurts them constantly. So, I mean, it's a very theoretical question. I haven't done a lot of people that they just weekly, daily, this hurts, that hurts, my nose, my head. And again, like, when you make away pain, it's very not nice. It's very invalidating. On the other hand, when somebody lives constantly talking about their every little thing that bothers them, we're not talking about, like, you know, that they were in a car accident. They're just like, my stomach, my head, my nose. It's a constant cycle. Maybe they were trained like that when they were brought up. I don't know. What's your opinion on this whole topic?
So we got to go back to the holistic viewpoint, which is we're composed of mind, body, and spirit. And so if it's an IBS thing, it could be a physical thing, like it could be an allergy or a sensitivity to a certain type of food or allergen. So one of the things I do with those clients is we do a food diary and we log their foods. What are they eating? And then how do they feel? And some people just know every time I eat, let's say bread or gluten, I feel bloated and I feel sick and I feel symptoms. Or every time I have something that contains soy, like, you know, they notice, they recognize that. So there's definitely physical things. And if we avoid those physical things, then we feel better. We don't have any symptoms. But then there's also the emotional experience, right? And so sometimes IBS is related to fear, sometimes related to anger, right? Stomach issues sometimes is related to territorial conflicts. So what's going on in my world where I feel pissed off, where I feel angry, where I feel frustrated? So each person has their story, right? So for me, it's really just about listening carefully to the words that they're using, the language that they're using, and trying to support them to find a healthier way of feeling, a healthier way of speaking, a healthier way of thinking. And sometimes it's enough to change the experience on a physical level. Sometimes it's enough to make the symptoms go away. But sometimes the symptoms are there, just like we've done a few times tonight. The symptoms are there to teach a lesson, to help us understand something. So we can take a pill or we can stop the food, but, you know, the bad food from coming into our body, but there's still a message there. What's the message about? I want to understand what's going on in my body. So don't discard the symptoms. Don't discard the condition or the medical experience. Like, really tune in to understanding that your body is so wise. And it's trying to get your attention about something that you may not want to know about or you haven't really paid attention to. So listen to your body and respect it and love it and cherish it and thank it.
Just in a general way, when should a person go to the doctor and when should he do the things that you discussed today?
Well, for sure. I mean, I'm not saying never go to the doctor. Of course not. That wouldn't be very professional of me, would it? Of course, go to the doctor if you're concerned. If it's a new symptom, it came out of nowhere. If it's persistent, if it's strong, if it's acute, If you're not sure, go to the doctor. When in doubt, always go. But after a while, you're going to start recognizing what is a physical somatic problem that's due to an imbalance in my body in which a doctor can help me, and which is it just my body trying to express something, in which case maybe I can do it on my own, right? And I would say do it on your own anyway. Start on your own and see how far you go. And then when you get stuck or when you feel like something's not shifting or not growing, then consult. But don't, you know, never not go to the doctor because if you feel like you need to go, don't hesitate. But the doctors only have a very specific way of looking at the body, right? And you have to understand that you're not going to get this kind of discussion and awareness from a physician. That's not how they're trained. That's not what they're going to look at. That's not the map that they use to understand what goes on in the body. They're looking for signs of pathology. And God bless them. They did an amazing job. We have to thank our physicians. We have to respect them and love them. But, you know, they're limited by the scope of what they use in terms of their tools. And they'll tell you, medicine is great for acute conditions, but we don't really know much to do about these chronic ones. So if you're looking for healing, look inside. And if you're looking to create a physical, you know, recovery or fix a physical symptom or remove the physical symptom because it's preventing you from doing something, then go towards medicine, right? But the healing doesn't come from a pill, doesn't come from an agent or from a logical agent. The healing comes from inside. Just like when I work with people with cancer, I tell them, I said, you know, the medical treatments are necessary. You have to do them, but don't believe that the medical treatments are going to heal you. And that scares people. Radiation and chemotherapy don't heal you. They kill the cancer cells. So what heals you? You're going to recover because your body has innate healing abilities. You're going to recover from the cancer. Your innate healer inside you is going to heal you. Think of cancer, think of chemotherapy as like a forest fire. It kills everything. But the forest regenerates. How does it regenerate? Hashem. It's God. It's nature. The healing potential of life. That's what helps us to heal. So the chemo, the radiation, the fire, whatever it is, those just serve to eradicate things that are bad for us. And we need the chemo, we need the radiation, we need those agents. But the internal part of us, the inner healer, is what gets us to heal.
Yes, tonight has been so deep, so powerful, really, really next level. Thank you for welcoming to the world of Coach Menachem's podcast. Really appreciate your part of it. Let's go to the closing segment. We're going to go to that part now. Again, a special thank you to Stefan for coming on tonight. Tonight's topic is so deep, so powerful. Again, we got to listen to it a few times. Again, if anybody wants to join the WhatsApp community, you can WhatsApp me at 732-314-1710. And I will send you a link, or you can go to www.menachembernfeld.com. Sign up for his email list where he could email you every week. The flyers, the posters, the replay. Again, if anybody's here the first time, every Sunday night at 9:30 on this Zoom ID, we have many different programs, topics. I'm doing this almost five years, so we've definitely covered a tremendous amount. Next week should be also something very powerful and interesting. November 23rd, we have two big therapists, Alexander Rand, very, very well known in Brooklyn, Yishur Carbona. The topic is trauma and the brain, EMDR and brain spotting, healing trauma through the eyes and body. Please join us. It should be an amazing program. If anybody has any questions, you could email coachmenachem@gmail.com. Everything is recorded. It'll be on menachembernfeld.com, YouTube, and all the other podcasts, Apple, Spotify, 24/6, every single one, we're on them. To hear tonight's program 209 on the phone, it will be up on the phone lines at 732-305-9011. And Mr. Stefan Ben Shushan, people want to know if they want to get a hold of you and they want to speak to you, they want to email you, they want to come to your house, they want your cell phone number. What would you like to share so people could get in contact with you? Don't give your cell phone number. That was a joke.
The best way to reach me is through the website. And there's two websites, but I'll give you the easy one, which is psysalte.com. So
you'll post that in the Zoom chat. Not now. When we closing, while Menachem talks, you can post that if you don't mind.
Yeah. So psysalte.com, psysante.com. Or they can reach me through email at Stephan, Stephane, at psysante.com, psysante.com. And it would be a pleasure and honor to connect with any of you.
Amazing. So again, thank you to all the advertising sponsors of Liquid Scoop, Ellie Narrow from Five Town Central, Kyla Kaufman and JCN Crew. And now we're going to go to the closing segments. I will say a few words, Menachem, and then Mr. Stefan, you could post your email address and your website in the public chat. There you go. And, oh, Menachem posted. And, you could also post it. And, after 2+ hours spending time with our very special crowd over here that comes here and hopefully the thousands and thousands of people that listen to it later, we'll leave you with the closing words. But I would like to say, Stefan, tonight was a very deep program. This topic is so powerful. I don't know, we didn't really mention it, but I know we spoke about it a little bit, like, if somebody does a tremendous work in therapy, at the end of the day, there's something about the body being healthy, exercising. It's the full package. It's not just our minds. It's not just our body. It's really somehow able to combine that in all aspects of our life, to the best of our abilities. There's obviously tremendous, thousands of books written on this, but I read The Body Keeps the Score, and I found it to be a tremendous, fascinating book. There's a lot of truth to it. But if we could be in touch more with our physical body and then with our emotional and try to get together when we're having a panic attack, know why we're feeling anxiety, see where it's coming from, try to work with it. It makes everything just much more wholesome. Even in therapy, right? A lot of times we have certain reactions or we're acting a certain way in certain situations. And if we are able to realize why we're doing that because of our past traumas and our brain, why we're doing it, there's also physical reasons why we do that. It could really give us, I guess, to a real wholesome place that we could really take everything and really grow from it. So tonight's topic is obviously super important. And I know a lot of people that go to therapy and, you know, they, in a certain sense, they feel better mentally, but their body feels depressed or they're not doing the proper things to make their body feel good. Or the opposite, people just, you know, they have a lot of stress and they go run and they go exercise, but they never work on the therapeutic part. So I think what we're really trying to come at tonight is that to really heal and feel internally content is when we're able to mix those things together. And hopefully people do a lot more research on this. People reach out to people. People discuss with the therapist this. And people factor in all those parts. And when people do have chronic pains and illnesses, obviously go to the doctor, obviously take the proper medication. But sometimes, for myself, I always say that sometimes I have this chronic thing that keeps on happening and nothing's coming through with the tests. Like, maybe there's something that's going on here that I have to try to figure out. Why every time I go to X place or every time I do this, my body's acting weird. You know what I mean? So when we're able to really work on that, it can really help us. It's very sad to see people living years and years with tremendous pain. Again, it's very hard to tell the balance. Sometimes people are in pain. I always said, Dr. Simon's book, I used to think, fun of my friend, you know? At one time, I had many times back pain. I had a lot of stress and my back would just go completely out. And my friend said, it's all in your head. I think it was even you, Menachem. You used to come, oh, it's all in your head. It's nothing. And I was like, okay, I hear you. And I'm trying to stand up and I was screaming in pain. I was like, I don't know, my head, my this, but the bottom line, the pain is intolerable. So again, there's a balance. But anyway, that's my thoughts. Coach Menachem, you and Stefan, you'll take it away afterwards.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you very much. Wish I hope your back is better by now.
Much better.
All these programs. Yeah, so thank you. Thank you so much, Mr. Stefan Ben Shushan. Just listening to your voice, the way you give it over, I think, you know, people feel it, that they can actually slowly get to understand, get to connect to those spaces that they haven't, or it's too hard for them, or they don't know how. But I think it's fascinating that, you know, what we discussed tonight, it is a different language. We do have to find a way how to relax so that it's not our mind, so that we can connect to the messages that come through. And I guess, you know, it takes time. You know, some people get hired right away, some people it takes time. And then you mentioned that for some people, it could be they're not ready. It could be they're not ready, and that's okay. And that itself is a message. You know, they might say, you know, no. Like if you want to meet that inner child, says, you know, I'm angry now, I don't want to talk to you now, I don't want to tell you anything. And that's a message. To be able to listen to that and to say thank you, you know, when you're ready. To understand that there are people that are, you know, going through a lot, and the only way they can continue is by just continuing. They don't want to stop. They don't want to slow down. And we hope, you know, Hashem should help them all. Hashem help us all. We'll be able to connect, to understand, and our body, you know, Hashem gave our body that it should be able to heal. And it's Hashem for all of those that need it, for all of us that can tap into it. I think it's living from a different place, living in the present moment, like you mentioned, starting to live, start to be, and enjoy the moment. So thank you for that.
After 2+ hours, tell us what comes to your mind, body, and soul, and connect it.
First, it's been a pleasure and an honor to be with all of you, and I'm very touched by those that share their stories and ask their beautiful questions. You have a beautiful audience and a great community and people very, very in tune and ask quality questions. To me, that means that the level of consciousness is very high in this forum. So continue the good work that you guys are doing, because it's really helping people and bringing more lights into the world, which is so vital and important these days. And just a little takeaway from tonight, maybe just want everybody to kind of, I invite people to kind of tune in to what's going on in their body. You know, when you leave this form, what's happening in your mind, in your shoulders, in your back, in your body? Are you breathing? How are you breathing? And just kind of rebalance a little bit, connect to any part of you that's calling out to you. Listen internally. We do a good job most of the time of listening externally. Let's see if we can tune in and listen internally a little bit. And to me, that's a sign of self-respect. It's a sign of self-love. And it's honoring ourselves. So have fun with that and good luck. And, until next time.
Thank you so much.
Thank you, Stefan. Everybody have a wonderful night. We'll see you already. Same time, same place, next week, November 23rd, with Alexander Rand, Yeshua Carbona, Trauma in the Brain, EMDR, Brain Spotting, Healing Trauma Through the Eyes and Body. Good night, everybody. Have a wonderful week. Good night.
Kol HaLashon, a whole world of quality content.